This podcast is brought to you by Money Control. Hello and welcome to Money Control. You're listening to In the News with me, Anvita Bansal. Today is Monday, December 9th, and I'll be bringing you all the latest updates from India and around the world. We'll begin with Home Minister Amit Shah introduced the Citizenship Amendment Bill in Lok Sabha today. After that, we'll discuss the Delhi fire that struck in factory, killing over 43 people. North Korea said that it has carried out a very important test. Followed by, at least 100 tourists have gone missing in New Zealand due to sudden volcanic eruption. And lastly, Finland elects its youngest women prime minister in the world. Let's begin with, Home Minister Amit Shah has introduced the Citizenship Amendment Bill in Lok Sabha today. To discuss more on this, I have with me Money Control's Atharva Pandit. Hi Atharva, thank you for joining in.
Hello.
Atharva, what is the bill all about?
So the bill seeks to give Indian nationality to refugees from countries that share borders with India.
Right.
These are three countries, Afghanistan, Pakistan and Bangladesh.
Right.
And the proposed legislation, it amends the Citizenship Act of 1955.
Right.
And it to make the Hindus, Sikhs, Buddhists, Christians and Parsis who got into India from all these, the three countries, It seeks to make them eligible for citizenship.
Right. Are there any exceptions to the bill?
So the Citizenship Amendment Bill won't apply to those areas which come under the sixth schedule of the Indian Constitution. The sixth schedule basically deals with the autonomous tribal dominated regions.
Right.
In Assam, Meghalaya, Tripura and Mizoram. The bill will also not apply to the states which have an inner line permit, ILP.
Right.
These states include Arunachal Pradesh, Nagaland and Mizoram. So these are the exceptions to the bill. There were also reports coming in today that the government might announce something for Manipur as well. But of that we are not yet sure because the bill was tabled today. It was introduced by Home Minister Amit Shah today. And even as we speak, it will be under discussion, after which there will be a vote on whether to, you know, pass the bill or not in Lok Sabha.
Right. So Atharva, can you please tell all our listeners, why is the opposition against the bill?
So as the opposition said today during the before the bill was even introduced, So the opposition sought division of votes,
right,
to introduce the bill. So we can gauge the amount of opposition that the bill currently has in parliament. So the opposition, most of the opposition MPs said that the bill violates Article 14 of the Indian Constitution, which is the right to equality.
Right.
So their point was that it violates a number of articles in the Indian Constitution and it is against basic ethos of the Indian Constitution.
Right. Right.
But mainly it violates Article 14, it violates right to equality of fundamental right to equality of every citizen. So that is their argument, and to which Amit Shah has said that no, the bill does not violate any articles in the Constitution, which is why the opposition has been, you know, sort of against the bill for the longest time.
So Atharva, what will be the process now from here on?
So like I mentioned, the opposition called for a division of votes, and the ayes won for the introduction of the bill. So now then Home Minister Amit Shah introduced the bill in Lok Sabha. Now it will be put to discussion, after which Amit Shah will respond to all these points that different MPs make. And then once he responds, there might be some amendments. Like the BJD is reportedly planning to introduce some amendments. Then those amendments might be put to vote. And once that is done, the bill will be put to vote. And since the BJP has majority in Lok Sabha,
right,
and the BJP has also issued a whip to all its MPs till Wednesday, the bill won't have much of a difficulty to get past Lok Sabha in Rajya Sabha. However, it might be introduced on Tuesday or Wednesday. We are not sure of that. But whenever it is introduced, BJP does not have a majority in Rajya Sabha. However, it has, through its floor management techniques, it has been able to pass the triple talaq bill and the Article 370 legislation in the past. So this time as well, for instance, AIDMK, which has 11 Rajya Sabha MPs, they have said, which is a very huge chunk, they have said that they will support the bill. So it's interesting to see how things pan out in Rajya Sabha, but in all probability, the bill will also be passed in Rajya Sabha.
Right, we'll only have to wait and watch the fate of the Citizenship Amendment Bill. Thank you so much, Atharva, for all those details.
Thank you.
Well, bad news coming from the capital, as 43 people died in a fire that took place at a factory. To discuss more on this, I have with me Money Control's Ruchira. Hi, Ruchira. Thank you for joining in.
Hi, Anvita.
Ruchira, how did the fire take place?
The fire likely took place because of a short circuit. That's what the police say.
Okay.
The fire took place early morning on Sunday. And most of the 43 people who died were laborers who were sleeping at the factory. News 18 report suggests that the factory didn't have fire clearance. So definitely there was some slip in approvals, which potentially could have led to this fire. Because if appropriate approvals were there, this fire might have been prevented.
Right.
Yeah.
And what are the compensation packages that have been offered to the victims and their families?
So, two compensation packages have been announced. Prime Minister Modi has announced a compensation package of rupees 2 lakh for each family of the 43 people who passed away, and 50,000 for the injured.
Right.
So, Delhi Chief Minister Arvind Kejriwal has announced a compensation package of rupees 10 lakh to the families of each of the deceased.
Right.
And rupees 1 lakh for those who have been injured.
Right. And has the police said anything about the safety measures that should have been in place or will be taken care of in future?
No. So the investigation is still going on. So there aren't too many details about that. The Delhi police have arrested both the owner and manager of the factory. So they are going to start a detailed investigation into the incident.
Well, moving on to our next story, North Korea said that it has carried out a missile test. Ruchira, can you please share some details on this story?
North Korea said that they carried out a very important test, which was a missile launch. And this was a move to essentially show their strength.
Right.
And they did say that this, you know, would help them strategically. So this, of course, comes, you know, in the context of the US and North Korea relations, which haven't been too great in the recent past.
Right.
Even though Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un have met three times. But if North Korea does continue such tests, it might not signal good things for the equation between the two countries.
Right. How has Trump reacted to this news?
So US President Donald Trump is definitely not happy about the missile test.
Right.
He has said that this could void the special relationship between the two countries. Like I just mentioned, the two leaders have met thrice. And the meetings were expected to give North Korea a push towards its denuclearization program.
Right.
But such tests show that maybe North Korea is not fully going through with its denuclearization program, and the US may have to take a tougher stand depending on what the Trump administration finally decides.
Right. Thank you so much, Ruchira, for all those details. Well, moving on to our next story, at least 100 tourists have gone missing near White Island in New Zealand after a sudden volcanic eruption. To discuss more on this, I have with me Money Control Shraddha Sharma. Hi Shraddha, welcome to the show.
Hi Anvita.
Shraddha, what is this story about?
So the initial reports that we were getting is that a volcano erupted on Monday, that is today, in New Zealand.
Yeah.
Where, you know, a lot of tourists usually visit, and a number of people, around 100 people, were missing and injured after the eruption, including around 100 tourists.
Right.
The place is called White Island and it happened in the afternoon. We didn't have a lot of information when this incident actually took place.
Right.
But what latest we are getting is around 5 people are dead while others are still missing. Efforts are actually underway to locate if, you know, any more survivors are there at the location. You know, at least a dozen of the tourists are actually injured. So the location of New Zealand is such that it is very, like, it is prone to these eruptions, and it's one of the world's most tectonically volatile regions.
Right.
But experts are actually saying this was actually a relatively small disaster compared to, you know, the disasters that the site usually sees. But so far, 23 people have been evacuated, is what the media reports are suggesting.
Right.
The 5 who have died were among the evacuees.
Okay.
As per the information that we are getting from the commissioners and the local authorities, is that no further communication from the island since the evacuations, but around 10 people are believed to be at the location.
Right.
That needs to be rescued. Also, there were like a few people who were about to leave the location on the boat and they were evacuating. This is when, I wouldn't say evacuating then, they were leaving the location. They were part of the tourists who had come to see the place.
Right.
They were leaving and they were on the boat. So this is when the incident happened. A few of them were able to take pictures and videos of the eruption.
Right.
So the people who were too close to the disaster were actually might be in danger, but the people who could, you know, safely evacuate the place were able to bring in more information, because the information was scarce that was coming right after the incident.
Right.
It's only now that we know like 5 people have been dead.
Right.
Also, I would just like give a little bit of background on the place. It's called Wakari or White Island. And photos of, you know, these hazards keep on coming. So people who were visiting the area are from a range of nationalities. So different people, tourists were there. Both New Zealanders and tourists have been caught in the disaster. And 30 tourists from the nearby cruise ship at the time of the eruptions were taking pictures. And so that's how we know.
Right. Considering the sensitivity of the place, why was it even open to tourists?
So basically, the place has different levels of danger at different points in time. So, you know, the alert level is from 0 to 5. That means, but of course, there's a lot of uncertainty also around the place.
Right.
So suppose if it is raised at 2, it might not be as dangerous as it is at around, you know, 5.
Right.
So
right.
Basically, tours with, you know, supervision and with safety requirements, that is, they are supposed to wear, you know, proper equipments, and they're supposed to have, you know, certain type of footwear, and all of that is taken care of.
Right.
And they are only supposed to be on a supervised tour. But of course, as you said, that's a valid question, that why are people allowed? But that's one of the most visited touristy places.
Right.
Although there's supervision, but this is one of those incidents where it was very uncertain.
Right.
And that time it wasn't at high risk of an eruption.
All right.
Then it was an uncertain eruption that happened, probably. So that's why it was, you know, one of those disasters that we are talking about. If you ask me about the background of the island, I'll just tell you it's around 50 kilometers offshore from New Zealand. A lot of people have asked this question, that why tourists are still allowed to visit the island when scientists have actually said that, you know, volcanic activities can...
Right, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But police have been asking people to avoid the areas in North Island where, you know, eruptions are very frequent. But turns out these guided tours actually are part of the year-long, you know, tourist visits.
Right, right. Lastly, Finland elects its youngest prime minister in the world. Shraddha, can you please tell us more about this person? Who is she?
So, a Finnish politician is set to become the youngest prime minister, as you said. Sanna Marin, she's 34 years old, the transportation minister. She will become the youngest ever prime minister after she is sworn in tomorrow. And on Sunday, actually, Marin narrowly won a vote among Social Democrat lawmakers, as per international media reports.
Right.
And after, you know, the coalition partner said that it had lost confidence in him over his handling of the postal workers' strike. That right. was the previous prime minister.
Hmm.
And as per reports, she was quoted saying that, and I quote her, I have never thought about my age or gender. I think of the reasons I got into politics and those things for which we have won the trust of the electorate. So this is what we know. And she also rose through the ranks after leading the city council of her industrial hometown.
Right.
When she was 27. So she actually had a very young start right. in politics. And the Social Democrats are the largest party in 5-member governing coalition as per reports.
Hmm.
And Maran actually took the top spot after beating the head of the party's parliamentary group. And she's not only the world leader in her 30s, there are other leaders as well. If you talk about Ukraine and the New Zealand Prime Minister, they are all in their 30s.
Right.
But she happens to be the youngest.
Right. Shraddha, what is the women representation in Finland Parliament like?
So I think you'll be very happy to hear this. The
right.
5 major parties in Finland's parliament are actually all led by women.
That's amazing.
And 4 of these 5 women are actually in their 30s. So young women are actually part of Finland politics is what we are seeing.
Right.
So that's thrilling. If I had to name some, Lee Anderson, who is 32, is the leader of the Left Alliance. Maria Ohisalo, 34, leads the Green League.
Right.
The center party is led by Katri Kulmuni, 32, among other women leaders.
Shraddha, can you please tell our listeners a little bit about her background?
So, there's one interview that she did with one of the media organizations.
Hmm.
It turns out to be very interesting.
Hmm.
She spoke about her background and we hear that she was raised in a rainbow family in a rented apartment when she lived with her mother and her mother's female partner.
Right.
And we hear that her mother had been very supportive and, you know, encouraged her to do whatever she wanted to be.
Right.
And she was the first person in the family to actually go to a university.
Hmm. Interesting.
And at the age of 27, she actually rose through the ranks of the Social Democrats and became an MP in 2015.
Right.
After that, as I said, she was been the Transport and Communications Minister since June. And she's also a mother to a 22-month-old daughter.
Wow, that's amazing. Thank you so much, Shraddha, for all those details.
Thank you, Amrita, for having me.
And now a word on our subscription product. Money Control Pro offers actionable investment ideas, independent research, insights and analysis from the world of business, economy, politics and policy. Get access to Money Control Pro at ₹599 for a year. Use code GETPRO. For more information, check out the Money Control website or mobile app. The offer is available on Android and the web.
Well, with that amazing news, we wrap this edition of In The News. In case if you have any queries or suggestions for us, please do write to us on mcpodcast@nw18.com. I repeat, mcpodcast@nw18.com. Until then, it's me, Anvita, signing off. For more news, views and updates, stay logged on to moneycontrol.com. Thank you for listening.